Welcome to the Informed Pregnancy and Parenting Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Elliot Berlin, and I'm here today with co-host Kristen Polacy. Welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
It's always great to have you. You have questions that I would never think of. Today, we're talking about yoga and meditation in general, and for pre- and postnatal in particular. I'm super excited to introduce today's guest, who is a yoga and meditation teacher. She's been teaching in the Los Angeles area for almost 2 decades and is one of the senior teachers and teacher trainers at YogaWorks. My good friend and great colleague, Patty Quintero, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. So good to be here.
Oh my goodness. Good things come to people who wait. We've been trying to schedule this night for like a year now.
All in divine timing.
All in divine timing.
And I get to be present.
And you get to be glad. I talked with on a different episode about how I got into yoga, which was a one-time experience, and ended up with a broken mirror and broken self-confidence. And I never went back to it again. And I do see, though, the benefits of it. Meditation is also fairly new for me. I mean, I've meditated in ways without calling it meditation, through prayer and other things like that. But now I'm meditating just for the sake of meditation, and I'm already getting a lot of benefit out of it. So I want to find out more, for me a little bit, but also for, I see how powerful it is. Both of them can be for our clients who are pregnant and during labor and delivery and postpartum and for parenting and everything else in life that's a struggle. So I can't wait to learn from you. Tell me how you got started in this work.
I kind of feel like I have been, it's been calling me since I was a little girl. You know, I used to do these things where I'd sit on a balcony and, like, chant to birds, or I would put myself in the actual physical, like, pretzel lotus position when I was small and pretend I was meditating. And I guess at the time I didn't really know what I was pretending to do, but it was something that inherently felt very familiar in my body.
Where did you grow up?
I was born here in California.
Oh.
Yeah, and my parents are Colombian, so we moved soon after, when I was about 5, to Colombia.
Oh, you moved from California to Colombia?
Uh-huh.
And that's where you were sitting on the porch?
No, you know, I mostly started as little, doing it here. I used to do these things here called, in my neighborhood, it was called like Bionic Woman Lessons, and I'd have kids from the neighborhood come around, and I would teach them how to leap across like the lawn and how to tumble and how to like do handstands. And so there
when you were 4 and 5
I mean,
years old?
I was.
I don't even remember what I was doing when I was 4 and 5 years old.
Yeah, well, that's yoga and meditation for you, right?
Well, I don't know. You're
the benefits
have to teach
of mindfulness.
Wow.
Yeah, so I was doing that a lot.
Like Wonder Woman and roll and fall.
I'll teach you Thank how you. To spin like Wonder Woman.
That's what I think I've been missing.
Yeah, so I think it just came at a very early age, and I was always very interested in what we think as children to be mystical, and I questioned a lot about, you know, spirituality. I talked to my grandmother, who is a very spiritual woman, about all of these ideas, and it just kept calling me through.
And then how long were you in Colombia for?
About 8.5 years.
Oh, and then you came back
as
a teenager?
Yeah, we moved back to Miami in the 80s because those were not good times to be in Colombia.
Right.
Yeah.
So we moved back, and I lived in Miami, and I graduated high school, and I went and did my undergrad there and then my master's in Miami as well.
What did you study?
I studied film and theater as my undergrad.
I did not know that.
And, you know, I feel like in retrospect, I knew I wanted to be in front of people. I knew I wanted to be on a stage. I just didn't know it was going to be a yoga stage.
Yeah.
So I did that. And then I moved to New York, and I tried to live that dream out and got my butt whooped. And I started to teach. It kind of found me again. I started to teach children in New York City.
For acting, you went to New York?
Uh-huh, for acting and film. I actually did very little acting in New York. I fell into a job doing music videos and commercials at a music video company, and it was a blast because I'm a huge music person. But it was really rough. It was rough on my spirit. And so I really dove into yoga there. I started practicing yoga there officially, I guess what you would call more like an official yoga practice.
Taking classes
and really diving into meditation. New York City had these, you know, lots of great little nooks that seemed really inviting, and I started kind of stepping in through the door through meditation, and that was a big vision quest for me being over there. And then when it got way too cold for my sunshine blood, I moved back to Miami, and I got my master's in education. So yoga was kind of calling me. You know, I think when you kind of like you put this mental GPS out there and life is going to take you in very strange directions to really get you there. So I got a master's in education to be a school teacher, not knowing that I would eventually become a yoga teacher.
So you have all these building blocks that kind of make sense perfectly. They create a strong foundation for what you do now.
Oh, yeah, completely. It was always calling to me. And then when I started, when I actually finished my degree, I dreamt of coming back to LA. I had dreams of the sunsets here and of the mountains. And I decided after that that I would move back to LA, and I started to teach kindergarten. And as soon as I started to teach kindergarten, I continued to practice all these years. I would close all the windows and all the like shades of my room, and I would just like be like, let's do yoga.
With
my kindergarteners. Oh, wow. Yeah. So I would put them, and we would do all these animal shapes, and I would do this thing called imagination journey, and I'd put them on their backs. And that was really, in the yoga practice, what's called Shavasana.
Mm-hmm. So you hadn't taken yoga teacher trainings yet.
I hadn't. No, I had not done an official yoga teacher training.
So you were just making up
things. I was making up what I had learned from my teachers and from my studies in the different traditions that I had been studying. And I had always had this connection with young children. Mm-hmm. I always felt like that's when I felt most magic, when I was a young child. So it was a lot of fun for me to work with these little people who were in such a formative stage and their brains are pruning to be able to see them, you know, have fun and relax and connect to that magic was amazing.
How long did you teach kindergarten?
For 2 years in LA, and then I taught a little bit in Miami before I moved here.
Oh, okay. So where'd you go from there?
From there, I actually went to Cabo.
To live?
Yes, I did. At the time, I met my fiancé, who was moving to Cabo. He's no longer. I married him, and he's now, you know, my ex-husband. Mm-hmm. But at the time, we met in Venice, and he said, you know, I'm moving to Cabo, and so he'd fly me out there, and he was also a yogi, and he was going to start teaching yoga there and run a supper club. So when he proposed to me, I moved over there, and we lived up this surf break, this little place called Old Man's, and we lived up a surf break in a cottage, and we taught yoga and started all these yoga programs in like hotels like Ventanas, and really, I mean, really cool because there wasn't a lot of yoga there at the time. Mm. And then we moved back here to really do some official teacher training, and that's when I landed in Yoga Works, and that was...
When you were taking your teacher training to become a teacher.
Yeah, we came back from Cabo to get married here in L.A., and we got married, and I signed us up for the Yoga Works teacher training, and this was in 2001, and we both did the teacher training, and... You know, the woman who I consider one of my greatest teachers, she was leading it, and she pulled me out of the room one day, and she said, you need to be teaching for me, and I'm going to have you start teaching now.
Wow.
So she threw me kind of to the wolves and put me under.
Sounds like it was a rough period where you were trying to get a teacher job and couldn't find one anywhere.
Yeah, I was lucky. It was really scary, but she took me under her wing, and there I was.
And how many years ago was that?
That was in 2001, so we're almost, 2018?
Yeah, so that was 17 years ago.
Yeah.
How have things evolved since then?
Well, you know, life happened. I started to teach,
Did you love it?
The
way
loved
you talk
it.
About it, people can't hear it.
Or see her face.
You can't see the face, but you just look so happy talking
about
it.
I love it. You know, I never have felt something was so right. For me, even to just have switched after putting years of school into getting a master's in education, to have taken that leap and really followed my heart was a huge deal because yoga changed my life. I mean, I felt it. Anytime I was practicing yoga or meditation, I felt at home in myself. And I was like, this is what I am here to do.
Did you study meditation separately?
I did. I studied it in the beginning before I actually really got too much into the physical aspects of yoga, which is asana. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the tree of yoga has many branches, and the asana is the physical portion of the practice, and meditation, you know, kind of goes down toward the end when you're really going inside. Mm-hmm. So I did start a sitting practice, a meditation practice, and then that kind of like took me into doing more of the physical yoga, which I had been a gymnast, so I kind of felt that came.
Seems helpful.
It was helpful. But you know, it's goes so beyond the physical aspects. So then after I started teaching with Yoga Works, we actually left Yoga Works to go open up our own yoga studio. And my husband at the time and I, and we had a yoga studio in the Pacific Palisades called Jiva Yoga, which eventually became a Yoga Works.
Oh, really?
They bought it. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And we realized we didn't want to be business owners that way and have all of that over our heads, and we just wanted to be teachers. We agreed to pull our part out, and they sold.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
All roads lead back to Yoga Works.
They do. Mm-hmm. I ended up there, and I'm still there.
Yeah. And you've grown so much in what you do. And you do a ton with pregnancy and postpartum and motherhood in general. And in the second part of our program, I want to talk about that. Where do you see the average person who hasn't done yoga and hasn't done meditation? Where do they pick it up? Where's a good place to start?
I think oftentimes the doorway in, I mean, there's so many doorways into yoga for people. Nowadays, doctors talk about yoga, so it's popular. You see it on commercials. You see it in magazines and the internet everywhere. So it's become a very commercial item. But it's oftentimes through the door of feeling like I'm very stressed out and I need to do something to help unwind and get healthy physically because the stress is affecting me physically. So it's oftentimes coming from a lack of. And if you think about it, the word yoga means union, bringing together, yoking. So oftentimes what brings someone into a practice is feeling, you know, not put together or disjunct or disconnected.
But there seem to be, for the novice who doesn't know anything about yoga, there seem to be lots of different names for types of yoga.
Yeah.
And it's also a little intimidating to sort of peek through the window and watch the movements that are happening and
yes.
the synchronicity sometimes that's happening and think, I don't know if I can do that.
Yeah.
So then it's intimidating. You just don't.
I think you're 100% right. I think one of the things that a lot of teachers that have been doing this for a long time, they would agree with you because they see that what you'll often hear is, oh, I don't practice yoga. I'm not flexible enough, or I'm very tight, or I'm stiff. And it's really, I mean, that's who we want practicing yoga.
Exactly. But sometimes it's the people that need it the most that have the hardest time getting in there, just like the treadmill.
Or they start and then they stop and then they find themselves trying to keep going back to it, but they for some reason don't stay with it. I feel like my dad's like that. He really wants to try.
My doctor told me to do yoga because I have high blood pressure.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, you have to do yoga and meditation. My medical doctor told me, go do yoga and meditation. And I'm like, when you were talking about how you used to teach kindergarten
mm-hmm.
and we would lay on our backs and be different animals, I'm like, that's where I feel like I need to start.
Yeah, I can come and do animal yoga with you, doctor.
Okay, well, what did Lori say she was going to do? Lori said she was going to do something with me, chakra-based, yin, something.
Restorative.
But I'm taking you both up on it because I want my blood pressure to go down.
No, it is. It's intimidating. And I think that we, you know, more and more we want to demystify the practice and make it known that it's not the physical aspect. Just because you're doing a one-armed handstand doesn't mean you are getting a better yoga practice. Mm. On the contrary, I think as I get older, my physical practice has become more tame and slower, and I have less of a need to do all the acrobatics that might have really, like, you know, given me that, you know, the excitement when I was younger.
When I meditate tonight, my mantra is going to be, you don't have to do a one-arm handstand to have a great yoga session.
Exactly. To be enlightened. You don't have to do a one-armed handstand to be enlightened.
That'll be going.
I can be your hashtag.
Thank you.
Yeah,
I'm going to record you saying that. Actually, we just recorded that,
just
so
it a couple
I'll play
of
it
times.
For 5 or 6 minutes till I wander off, and I'll probably wake up with a sore shoulder. I wish there was, like, Yoga 101 for people who haven't done it before.
There
or
is.
Like a 10-week program for just, like, getting your feet wet with other people who are novice. And I wish there was, like, because just like there's prenatal yoga, probably the same modifications for, like, big fat guy yoga. I wish we had those classes that we can come into and just do big fat guy yoga. But I also think that the names are intimidating by themselves. There's so many different names, and they're not in English, so I don't know what they mean.
Right.
Sounds I mean, great. Are there basic divisions of different types of yoga? Like, if I'm looking to start and I'm looking at these names, what do they mean?
Well, they all have translations. They're going to end in asana. So like Vrikshasana, Tadasana. And I am actually someone who was taught to teach the Sanskrit language. So I always say the postures in Sanskrit. It was just, you know, it was very that there was no other way. So sometimes when someone comes and says, oh, do you know like Fallen Angel or something. I know it by its Sanskrit name more so than its English name. But like anything.
But that's a pose.
It's a posture.
But there's a style. Like the styles have different
they
names.
They do. The traditions have different names. So you'll hear Iyengar Yoga,
right.
Ashtanga,
yes.
Kundalini.
Thank you.
And so it's kind of like you're
but
picking
what are they?
Well, it's like you're picking a restaurant. And you're looking at the different foods. I got your attention. So let me put things in a way that your brain understands.
Thank you.
It's like you have many different restaurants. You have the Italian restaurant, the Indian restaurant, you know. And so you're going to choose that. And you may get, you're still going to get some of the same ingredients, but they're going to be taught through a different tradition.
Mm, different spices.
Different spices, different flavors.
Yes.
And you can kind of track them back to different teachers that kind of started the lineage or that brought the lineage here to, you know, the West.
So but by way of an introduction, I know like what Mexican food, what to expect or Italian or
right.
Chinese. But what about like those styles that you mentioned? Are for someone starting out, like how would I pick if I don't know what they are? Is there a translation to like, oh, this is sort of like more... Is it more meditation-based versus physical, or
yes.
is it more
Yes, I think that they all
of
do.
A workout?
For example, I'll give you an example. Iyengar Yoga, which you may have heard, what I studied for the most of my career was Iyengar and Ashtanga. I did some Shivananda, and I did some Bikram, and I know this sounds foreign to you,
I know
by the
Bikram's
way you're looking
the sweaty
at.
One.
Right, I mean, I kind of got played
right.
around in the
yes.
different ones.
Am I right about that? The hot sweaty
that's
yoga?
One, yeah.
Is there one just out of curiosity that's done in a like sort of a refrigerated room?
Like cryo.
Well,
yoga.
That would probably I wouldn't say refrigerated, but in Iyengar yoga they don't heat the room. They don't believe in heating.
I
want to
do it in
room.
A really chilly room.
And that would probably be a good one. And actually
I want to call it frozen yoga.
Iyengar yoga is a very good yoga for beginners because it's very alignment based.
Iyengar.
And you're going to be learning which is
alignment
named
based.
After Mr. Iyengar. It's very alignment-based.
That's so what we're all about, alignment-basing.
Totally.
Yes.
Well, this is why I thought it would be a good one for you.
That's what they teach at our school, actually.
And it's taught...
Your school teaches yoga?
Yeah, they have a yoga
I'm part of their
program.
I'm part of their faculty.
You're at their school?
At Loyola Marymount.
Oh, at LMU. Mm-hmm. Oh,
but
okay.
Also at the chiropractic college, they have a yoga program.
Okay.
And they teach that.
Yeah, and I think it's great because it is all about that. And this is, I mean, I am so appreciative that I learned alignment before I started to teach, you know, more sophisticated postures because, I mean, it's the foundation of the structure. So when you really are teaching from that place, you're inviting people into their bodies and it really brings them into all the tiny areas and how to root and how to create a stable foundation in order to align everything on top. And so it's a place where I think beginners can not feel overwhelmed because it's not so much about how fast you're going or, you know, the music playing or the heat in the room. And it's usually going to be taught with great detail.
I like that.
Mm-hmm.
When you teach now, do you teach different, cuisine, so to speak, at different times, or do you just take a little bit from each
and
make your own patty yoga?
I have an international cuisine.
I think
I'm at a point now where I have become quite innovative with how I teach. I definitely teach alignment always, especially because I do work with so many pregnant women and postpartum women. But I teach alignment based. But I was also a student of Ashtanga yoga, which has a repetitive motion to it, and you're following, your body's following the rhythm of the breath. So it does become a little more cardiovascular, and you are moving, and there is that fire that's kind of being stoked along with alignment.
Mm-hmm.
So I teach a hybrid of that, which nowadays has been coined vinyasa flow. So you might see that on a schedule too. And if you see that, it usually means that you're going to be moving.
Okay.
And repeating.
So it's more of a physical workout.
It's going to be, most likely.
Although when I hear
physical vinyasa,
I sort of think of balsamic. I don't know why.
He's going to name them all
vinyasa,
by, like, oils.
Balsamic.
Yeah, I'll rename everything, make my own menu. What about meditation without yoga? Is there merit in that? And how would someone get started in that? Because if you have a busy mind, it's again, like the people who need to do these workouts or calm their bodies a little bit. I think I'll put myself in that group, have the hardest time getting started because we have such a journey ahead of us.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with the mind. We all, I haven't met anybody yet who doesn't have stress and the mind races, and the mind wonders what's happening tomorrow and doesn't really stay present today. And of course, once you have kids, that just picks up even faster. But you want to be more present, but it's even harder to do. And I've just sort of downloaded an app for meditation and started listening to it. And it's been really helpful because you can hear all these different instructors and there are different approaches to it. And they're all like 5 minutes. So I can pretty much hold on through at least half of it.
Right.
And I've been sort of then building my own meditations. Like if I wake up at 4:30 in the morning, usually I would never be able to fall back asleep. And it's just worth it for me to get up and work out or start working. But now I can do meditation and either fall back asleep or just enjoy the benefit of meditating for an hour.
Right. I mean, I think it's important to define that meditation does fall under the umbrella of yoga. When we hear yoga, we think the physical postures of yoga, but meditation is one of the branches of the tree of yoga.
Mm-hmm.
When we think of yoga here in the West, we think of asana, which means the physical postures. Yeah, the movements. So because of the nature of this country, and we're all very physically motivated, and what helps often is to get the body moving and to kind of burn off all of that, you know, physical accumulation of stress so that we can sit with an open vessel and we can tune in more easily into a space, a meditative space, and into a space of stillness and into a space of observation without the body pulling us back and forth. Because mm-hmm. as you know, both of you work with bodies. I mean, there's billions of neurons in the brain and the body, and we store all of this information in our cells. So the physical postures help to move a lot of that before we get to breath work and before we get to meditation.
Mm-hmm.
So in the tree of yoga, you know, the postures come first and then the breath work comes, and then you start going into states of deeper concentration.
So I'm out of
and
order.
And into meditation. No, I don't particularly think it's out of order. I think that there are great benefits in having a sitting practice and having a meditation practice, even without the physical postures.
It's more of a laying down practice.
That's perfect. Okay. You're still in your physical body.
Just saying. But because I see all these places opening up that are like meditation places that are different than yoga places.
Yeah. Because I think that there is that differentiation. It's like we don't have to necessarily be doing a physical practice in order to get the benefits of meditation. Does it help? I think that, I think they can be two separate entities. I think that the physical practice combined with the meditative practice is really potent. But I don't believe that, you know, one has to always go with the other.
Talking to you is so calming.
Oh, good.
I want you to come back and be a guest, right? Aren't, don't you just feel relaxed?
Oh, I feel like we're meditating right now.
Seriously. It's so calming to just be around you and talk to you.
Oh, thank you.
And then also, the way you talk about yoga makes so much sense.
Good. I hope so.
And that's sort of what I wanted the first half of our...
Yeah, to make it not intimidating.
Yeah, or our episode to be is to sort of just be like, it's not that far away. You can break it down. You can touch it. You can get into it and conquer it. Can I start at home?
Yes, absolutely.
How do I do that?
I mean, whether you're saying you're doing it with the apps right now.
Meditation.
Right. But even without that, you could find either if you're someone who gets distracted with silence, you can find some kind of very soft music that helps you go inward. Or you can have a mantra, which it can be, you can inhale, relax, and you can exhale, release. You can inhale, relax, you can exhale, release. And there's so many, these are called anchors. You can count, you can breathe up your spine. If you're more of a visual person, you can visualize breathing up your spine and breathing down your spine. So what we're doing is we're giving the mind different anchors depending on how we're wired, because it's going to be different for all of us. And ultimately, what those anchors are doing is they're dimming the projections of the mind so that attention can go inward, so you can withdraw your senses, and so you can learn to be in a state in the seat of the seer instead of being the seen. So it's almost like you come into the seat of the self. And that's ultimately you cultivating intimacy with yourself, which means greater self-awareness, greater self-love, knowing your truth, and navigating, then making decisions, making choices, dealing with your clients from a space that is from that seat versus from everything else that, you know, is on the outside.
That's really powerful. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
And also, if you're listening, you're not watching, but even when Patty was pointing to, like, going up the spine and coming down the spine, you could sort of feel it in your spine.
Mm-hmm.
Very powerful. All right, we're going to take a quick commercial break and be right back with Patty Quintero, and we're going to talk about specifically prenatal yoga, postnatal yoga, right here on the Informed Pregnancy Podcast. I understand the mental demands of motherhood. I see it every day in my practice. That's why I'm excited about Needed's new cognitive support. Unlike other supplements, it's specifically formulated with postpartum and breastfeeding moms in mind, using safe and effective ingredients. This means that moms can get the brain boost they deserve without compromising safety. Plus, it includes clinically studied ingredients, proven to support focus and memory. Hurry and get your cognitive support from Needed before you forget. Visit thisisneeded.com and use your code Berlin to get 20% off your initial order. This episode is sponsored by an innovative product that's made a big difference for parents and babies alike, Dr. Mom Butt Balm. As a parent of four, I've had my fair share of battles with diaper rash, often resorting to thick, unpleasant pastes. I only recently discovered Dr. Mom Butt Balm, and I was immediately impressed by its pleasant consistency and ease of application. This pediatric-approved skin protectant is free from dyes, preservatives, and zinc oxide, making it perfect for your baby's sensitive skin. It's designed by a doctor who's also a mom, ensuring your little one gets the gentlest care. A small dab is all it takes to soothe and protect, avoiding the mess and hassle of traditional treatments. With ingredients like dimethicone and petrolatum, Dr. Mom Butt Balm not only soothes, but also restores your baby's delicate skin. Available on Amazon.com and Walmart.com, it's the smart choice for every parent wanting to keep diaper rash at bay. Remember, with Dr. Mom Butt Balm, nothing comes between you and your baby, not even diaper rash. Welcome back to the Informed Pregnancy and Parenting Podcast. We are continuing our discussion of yoga and meditation with Patty Quintero. I've already learned a great deal from you, and you are this powerhouse in the pre- and postnatal world. You have a brand called UMA.
Yes.
What is that, and what does it mean, and where did it come from, and what's included in it?
UMA Mother is, the definition of UMA is Mother of the Universe and Goddess of Light. So the name came to me, probably in the shower or in a dream, because that's where I usually get my downloads. But it's all sparked from my experience as a mother, and then my experience going through divorce and becoming a single mother. And then actually a very, just dealing with realizing the importance of mothers needing to be mothered. And then there was a very scary experience where I had to run out of my house in Venice with my two young children and the two young children of the neighbors because there was an intruder and we had to run away at 4 a.m. And the reason this story is important is because nothing terrible happened. We were not hurt, but I never felt so fierce. And, you know, they talk about mama bear or like the mama wolf, and I've never embodied that like I did at that moment.
Wow.
You know, they say you'll stop a car with your hand, you'll pick up a car if your kid's underneath it. It's true. I felt this insane fire and fierceness in that experience, and it just was the catalyst to creating a platform to support mothers, empower mothers, inspire mothers with mindful living.
How, you have two kids.
I do.
And at the time that you were pregnant, were you already doing prenatal-related work?
Yeah. I had been teaching for several years before I got pregnant. I got pregnant in 2003. So I had been teaching for several years prior to that. And I had worked with pregnant women here and there, and I think I was always fascinated with motherhood and everything that happens through that journey to birth. But it wasn't until I really got pregnant that I started to fully experiment with what felt good on my body, with how much fear was being fed to me during my pregnancy, you know, through literature and through just the way people would talk about it. And even through the practices that I found were very mild and not, you know, I felt like I was in warrior mode and in the most beautiful way. Like I felt abundant from the inside and strong. And so I was practicing Ashtanga yoga at that time, which is actually a practice that was created for teenage boys, but it had a lot of fire to it. And so what I did was I took that and I kind of adapted it to my body through that stage. And I felt like this is really what I want. Let's see if other mothers in this stage want it too. And it was a hit.
So, I mean, a lot of times prenatal yoga is deliberately fluffy.
Right.
Because number one, it's people who maybe are picking up yoga for the first time. And number two, I assume it's like with massage and other modalities, sometimes for liability reasons, you're just really told to be very mild.
Mm-hmm.
You know, don't push too hard on here and don't all the don'ts.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily based on science, but based on theory or hypotheticals or just straight out liability.
Right.
So in our office, we frequently have people who come in who are strong, who have been working out or who do feel that fire, that power that you were talking about. And they'll go to a local prenatal yoga class and just not. I just had one very recently who just couldn't continue because it was too, her word is fluffy, too light. She felt like she was moving props, she said.
Right.
And then I send them to you, and they're like, now that's what I'm talking about. Right. But then I think there's other people who would be intimidated by that strong
class. Sure. And I think that's
and they
the
like
beauty.
Something more light.
Right. There is. That's why, you know, there's many different that's, I think, the great thing is you can choose what suits you. So I will get usually pregnant women that are wanting to still do things that are physically energizing and that they're getting physically strong in. But I teach with alignment because that's the only way I really know how to teach. So I teach even my stronger postures all have modifications, and there's an emphasis on alignment. But I also feel like it's my job as a teacher, as a mother, and maybe through my doula work, to remind them that they are really prepping for a great, great physically demanding experience. And I want them to be strong, and I want them to be very connected to that inner strength.
Are you talking about childbirth or motherhood?
Both.
Okay. There you have it.
One leads to the next. I think they're all stepping stones to the great journey of motherhood.
How was childbirth for you?
It was great. Yeah. I had really, really wonderful pregnancies, both of my pregnancies. My kids are 18 months apart, so they were pretty back-to-back.
Oh, wow.
But they were lovely. I only have, you know, good things to say about them. I do think that I know so much more now that I probably might have chosen a different path to go by what I know now. But they were both beautiful experiences, and my pregnancies were really great too.
How often do you hear that?
Unfortunately, not as much as I'd like to.
Right.
So that's probably what really pushed me into the doula arena.
Yeah, when did you become a doula?
When? So I was probably doing renegade doula work before I officially stepped into it, just because I was their teacher and I was a fellow mother. But it was about officially 4 years ago, I would say 4.5 years ago, I started to call myself a doula. And then I just kept it to myself that I had been at several births assisting women. So when I kind of jumped into that, it was really interesting to see it not only through the mother perspective or the teacher perspective, but to be like a birth coach and a guardian through it, and to really get to be a witness to it, because it's so different when you're going through it yourself versus seeing it from an outsider's point of view. And I mean, it really inspired me to push the yoga and the meditation even more, because I felt like now that I had the opportunity to actually be in the room as a doula and having experienced it myself, I realized the huge importance for a mindfulness practice when we're stepping into that massive transformation. Because as we know, birth happens on the inside, and yoga points you inside, and meditation points you inside, and there's so much outside with, you know, technology and other people's stories and ancestral lineage that we're dealing with, that I feel like the best thing I can give any woman is a guide back into themselves and who they are, so they can make those choices from an empowered space.
Kristen, are you a yoga person from before you had your baby?
Yes.
You've been doing yoga for a long time?
I did yoga for a long time. I think I was in sports. So I played water polo, and kind of as a way to, that is a very physically demanding and stressful time. They always had us do yoga. And then I kind of found that as my own practice. And then I actually started studying. I was talking to her earlier that I started studying to become a teacher.
Oh, really?
But when I became through the school program at school, and I then became pregnant, so I didn't get to finish. But I have always been super called to that for some reason. Also, just I think that idea of why the question I asked earlier is, at times in sports, you're so physical and so disconnected sometimes because you're always thinking about the outside and how you relate to it, that you don't come inside. So I found it a very calming place to be. But I also got very frustrated in it, I think, also because I'm not used to doing that. You're not, when you bridge that gap, I think, of being very physical to becoming, when you're always out and you're helping others, it's very hard sometimes to come in. And I struggled with that. So I think that was always my interesting walk with yoga. But it's kind of that yin and yang, I think, that's hard in meditation in general.
Yeah.
Did it change for you during
yes.
during pregnancy?
Yeah. You know, during pregnancy, I also tried to do yoga, but I found that I didn't. I obviously needed to meet Patty. But I found that I couldn't do it. I tried and I went to classes and I.
Now
I
was you like, can do the training.
This is not pushing me to be physical. And I didn't continue that practice. And then asking her earlier, too, I now feel very disconnected and feel like my body's calling me to be active and in motion because I've never not moved my whole life. And in this last more than 2 years, I haven't moved. I've had to be very inside. I'm also finishing this demanding program and being a mom. So I just don't know who
Well, there's
that
no
is.
Way you're not moving with a toddler at home, but it's
sure.
a different kind of – it's not a dedicated for you movement.
Exactly. It's, again, for someone else learning to move, understanding their movements. It's very kind of interesting, like, retrospectively. Hmm. But I feel like I really resonate with that and understanding your body post-baby.
I think I think you'll like Uma training. Uma mother. I was – you graciously asked me to participate in a couple of the modules, and I loved being in that room. You just attracted this great group of women who want to give and want to empower in the same way that you do.
Yeah.
And
they
were just
–
you know, sometimes you – like I've lectured in lots of different settings. And sometimes people are just there because they have to be there. Even if they want to be there, they're just – everybody's got long days. And so you're just sometimes tired and not in the mood to listen. And it was just like the amount of focus and attention and thirst for knowledge and things that they can use to help their future clients. It was just really incredible. I loved the first one and I came back to do the second one and it was just as amazing. It was like a whole bunch of Patties in training.
Well, I feel like what happens is that when we're teaching, like when we're teaching something that has changed our lives, and when I can speak to it from a place that I realize how it helped me through my journey, so I'm speaking really from my perspective and from my heart, and that it does. It takes a while to get there. It takes life to get there. Then the audience that finds you is going to see that and is going to resonate with that. And I feel like as a teacher, I'm at a place now and having created Uma that I'm really, this is my passion. I fully believe in its importance for women, whether they are mothers of their own birth children or they're just really drawn toward this knowledge.
So in terms of pregnancy, for someone listening that's pregnant with their first baby, hasn't really done yoga before, and wants to get started, first of all, not every town has prenatal yoga classes. Even where we are in the heart of Los Angeles, it's hard to sometimes find classes that you can get to that are at good times or multiple times per week.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So how does somebody get started?
Well, that's a good question because I'm in the middle of creating online content to support women in that dimension when they're going from conception all the way to postpartum and beyond, and I'm doing it in Spanish also because I feel that it's of great importance. I wish I could, you know, and I will say my goal is to hopefully start traveling more and doing more of these seminars so that we can bring women together, because it's a journey that it's really important to be with other women. I think that the class that I teach at Yoga Works, I teach it on a Saturday. There was never Saturday classes there, and I created this slot for women who worked because they couldn't come to their prenatal class. It's a very powerful class where women who are at all different stages coming in. Some have done yoga. Some are very strong practitioners. Some are just there because their doctor or midwife said, go practice yoga. But what it does is once you get in there, we're all the same. You know, we all are going to go through this journey and it's going to have its twists and turns and we will all have different outcomes. But it brings us together in such a powerful way that we take that with us as we go into our labor. And then the same with postpartum. it's a key for women to be able to be with other women when they're going through that so they don't feel alone, so they realize that we're all going through those same challenges. And it makes a huge difference in your emotional support.
The online content that you're creating, is that like online classes?
Mm-hmm. It'll be online classes of meditation and physical practice and yoga.
That are pre-recorded?
They're pre-recorded. So it'll be content that you can get that, you know, takes you through each trimester into postpartum, into the 40 days. So it serves as a guide.
That's very cool.
The classes, when you do them live, I don't know when you get around to this within the structure of a class, but the clients, when I'm seeing my clients after who do prenatal yoga regularly, they talk about it as you were just saying, being with other women, but community. Like they feel a very strong type bond, and I feel like it's almost, in a way, it's therapy. It's therapeutic for sure, mm-hmm. but I feel like sometimes it's therapy. Like, I don't know when you do this, but they talk about how the teachers go around and just say what's happening with you right now or what's on your mind. And sometimes they, even just asking that question can be comforting. But then to be able to talk and to realize that other people are having the same experiences or they're not alone is something big. So I think that it would be cool if, I mean, the online content will be amazing because then somebody who can't get to a class can do it any place, anytime, or somebody who's just too embarrassed. That's me. But but it'd be cool. I can almost see you sort of being like the Peloton of yoga class, prenatal yoga classes, where you can virtually join a class at times that are helpful for you and sort of bring together that virtual community.
Yeah, that's in the works right now.
Oh, cool.
That's really cool. It's in the works right now, and it sounds really special. It's through another woman's company, and she found me to do it, and I hope that it can unfold because it is a way for us to not feel alone. I mean, I think you still have the absence of human connection that way. And I recommend, even on my platform on Instagram, I'm continuously telling, you know, women the importance of community and finding your group, even if it's small groups. I love when I start seeing other women's groups that are unfolding because that's ultimately the goal. They don't have to come to my class. I'm hoping that they're taking this information and they're doing it. This is part of why I lead the trainings, is because I want other teachers to go out there and continue to do this, because it's necessary. I mean, we are the guides of the future. We're imprinting the future. We're imprinting children. They're taking from our energy. They're taking from our words. They're taking from how we present ourselves in life. So why would we not be nurtured and nourished and tended to the most?
When you're doing prenatal yoga classes with an eye on labor and delivery, or birth, however someone gives birth, are there specific mental and physical goals that you have in mind?
Within the prenatal practice?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I try not to use the word goals necessarily, but I do offer different tools. We do breath work. We do vocalization. I think having women moan we do a lot of moaning and vowel sounds and release work, because the truth is that a lot of us haven't been taught to speak our truth or to open up the throat space and to release. And we know that there's a connection to the throat and the pelvis. And so I try to facilitate ways for them to move energy in their body. So when they come to their birth experience, they have that imprint of like, oh, this felt good for me. Let me do this moan. Let me move my body this way like we did. Let me do this mantra that she taught me in meditation. So that way I give them a toolbox, because it's going to really be different for every woman. And I'll get different messages. I'm like, the squats really helped me. That mantra you gave me really helped me. The moaning helped me. You know, so the visualization, we do a lot of visualization at the end together.
And on the physical side, are you using the movements to try to strengthen certain muscles, lengthen certain muscles?
All of the above. the beauty of yoga, of the physical practice of yoga, is that it's going to strengthen you, and especially if it's taught with alignment, with that kind of muscular energy, isometric awareness of hugging the muscles into the bone. You're talking to them about their pelvic floor, how to keep it spacious yet, you know, supple yet tone at the same time. You're talking to them about their abdominal muscles and how those muscles are going to actually help them push. So it is a combination of keeping their strength, helping circulation, helping them stay supple, and actually learning their landscape. Because if you're carrying a child inside of you, you should know how that home is built, right? Mm-hmm. Because then you can navigate better when you're delivering your baby.
Sure, that makes sense. Are there contraindications, people who shouldn't be doing yoga?
During pregnancy?
Yeah.
Yes. There's always going to be contraindications. And this is what makes it challenging. And sometimes I think for certain women, they're oftentimes a little wary of stepping into teaching this because there are so many things that they need to be aware of, you know. If there's high blood pressure issues, if they have any previous injuries from previous births, if they're working with diastasis. So there's a lot to take in. And I try, usually women will come up and tell me I'm dealing with this, and so I will give them some modifications. But then if they have something, I always say, you know, if there's something that you're wondering, come up and talk to me after, and then I can give them some personal modifications and variations to do.
Do you work with partners and dads?
Mm-hmm. I actually welcome partners into my big class on Saturdays.
Mm. Do they come?
Yeah,
oh,
they do.
Great.
It's great. Really cool. It's great. And I'll always call them out and I'll make everyone look at them. But it's beautiful. You know, they often come to me after and they thank me for letting them be there because I want to inspire them. First of all, I think it's amazing for them to see what their partner is doing and what every other pregnant woman is doing in the room. Mm-hmm. But they're learning, and I really feel inspired to help empower them to be the best support system that they can be for their partner when they go through that experience.
That's really cool.
I just feel like her whole message is so warm and needed in this space because it's such a, especially now with like the way that things are about trying, I feel like pregnancy in the media is like trying to disconnect women from each other. You know, mm-hmm. like, are you this type of birth or this type of birth? And
yeah.
this seems to be really just like what we need, you know, in that space of like bringing partners together. Yeah, that we're all doing it together and like almost like a tribe, you know, and
yeah.
these are your people and your tribe and becoming parents.
But that's what really brings us back to yoga. I mean, the two main tenets of yoga are kind of they almost are opposites of each other. One of them is described as practice, being eternally watchful, and the other one is non-attachment. And they're kind of the opposite. One can be looked as passion, and the other one can be passionless.
Mm.
So in yoga, that's essentially where you're being, and it's like the shadow and the light. And so if we realize that we have all of that in us, that we're both of those, that they coexist within each other, then we can start qualifying everything that we do and every experience we have as good or bad or right or wrong, or you shouldn't do this or you should do this. And it's just redirecting you back to you, because nobody knows how you should do it or what the unfolding or what the purpose of the experience that you're going to go through is really meant to teach you.
That is a solid truth.
Yeah. And so there is all of these words that are very subjective. I mean, the word natural is subjective. I mean, I like to tell my mothers that birth is supernatural.
Mm.
It's all supernatural, however you birth. In my opinion, supernatural, synonymous to magic. It is magic. So I think the less that we can qualify the experiences that we're going and the more that we can own them, I think that that can bring us greater happiness in parenting and motherhood.
I hate that our time is up. And I feel like we need to have you back just to do a whole episode on postnatal. We didn't really get to talk about it.
And I'm thrilled to do that.
It's a whole new world.
Yeah, it is a whole new world.
But we're going to call it an episode for now, but it's actually, I'm excited about it because then we get to have you back for another hour.
Yeah.
And
I just think it's such a great message that is so needed at this point.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, we were just talking earlier. I don't know who put us together a while back. I feel like I've known you forever.
I know.
And I've had the really honor and pleasure of working with you in several different settings.
Yeah.
At birth and in the workshops. And it's just every time I talk to you, there's not that many people. I try to learn something from everyone all the time, but I feel like there's so much that I could just learn from you and your life experience and the work that you do and that you've dedicated yourself to.
Thank you.
And thank you. It's like, wow, I appreciate you.
I feel very inspired after talking
thank
to you.
Thank you. Well, I love talking about it, and I consider myself very lucky to be doing what I get to do. So
it's so crazy from all the different like geographical places that you were and the the different things that you started, you know, in film and theater and then in
it's all
education
part of the whole.
And then kindergarten. It's like you literally went, you started in kindergarten and moved up.
Mm-hmm.
And now you're in like grad school.
Yeah. I don't know if it ever stops, right? And now with teenagers, I'm always like, okay, here I am, boot camp again.
And that's the other thing. You're this calm with two teenagers.
Yeah.
That's unbelievable. That's a testament to the power
of yoga and meditation.
Yeah.
Patty, thanks a million for being here. Kristen, thanks for being here again. Where do we find you online? That's so I forgot to ask you that.
You can, my website is umamother.com, and that's umamother.com. And it's the same on Instagram. It's umamother, and on Facebook, umamother. And
do you Snapchat?
I don't.
Oh, thank goodness. Okay.
I know. I don't Snapchat. You know, this is enough for me. Just even handling the platform of Instagram is so much. And I'm trying to keep, you know, practice what I preach with presence and mindfulness. So it's a practice.
I love it. So we'll follow you through Instagram.
Yes, please.
Perfect.
Do.
At home, thanks for listening to the Informed Pregnancy Podcast. If you like our program, share us with your friends, rate us, and leave a comment in your podcast app. If you have thoughts or suggestions for a topic, send it to us. We'll do it. You can write to info@informedpregnancy.com and then visit us online for more information at informedpregnancy.com.
I got a whole lot of questions for you. This kid's gonna test my will. I got a lot to learn and my baby's due.
This episode is sponsored by an innovative product that's made a big difference for parents and babies alike. Dr. Mom Butt Balm. As a parent of four, I've had my fair share of battles with diaper rash, often resorting to thick, unpleasant pastes. I only recently discovered Dr. Mom Butt Balm, and I was immediately impressed by its pleasant consistency and ease of application. This pediatric-approved skin protectant is free from dyes, preservatives, and zinc oxide, making it perfect for your baby's sensitive skin. It's designed by a doctor who's also a mom, ensuring your little one gets the gentlest care. A small dab is all it takes to soothe and protect, avoiding the mess and hassle of traditional treatments. With ingredients like dimethicone and petrolatum, Dr. Mom Butt Balm not only soothes, but also restores your baby's delicate skin. Available on Amazon.com and Walmart.com, it's the smart choice for every parent wanting to keep diaper rash at bay. Remember, with Dr. Mom Butt Balm, nothing comes between you and your baby, not even diaper rash.